This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Here at BFM, everyone is dedicated to supporting our local businesses and giving them a voice. With that, all of our producers and presenters have come together to highlight some of their personal favorites in what we're calling the BFM Collective, every Friday on Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Good morning, you're tuned in to Open for Business on Enterprise and I'm Sim Wee Boon. Studio 3 was started by Kashvi Emir in 2019 as an interior design studio focusing on a process-driven design philosophy and collaboration. Among the projects they've worked on are with Vivi Yusof on her Lilith and Duck stores. So joining me today to talk about Studio 3 and his journey as an entrepreneur is Kashvi Emir, the founder of Studio 3. Good morning and welcome to the show, Kashvi. Okay, I think let's start off first with maybe a bit of a background in Studio 3. Like, how did it start and how did you get into this industry?
Talking about Studio 3, the name itself actually is basically self-explanatory because, like, it's the third studio I ever started. Immediately after my design studies, right, I did my diploma in interior design and I did a degree in interior architecture. I worked at a few places, but not that long, at GDP, and I worked in a construction firm. And then after, I think, about a year and a half working, I decided to just pursue my own design studio. So I did an interior design studio as well for the first time. It was at a very dodgy area in Damansara, right? And then after like maybe about a year into that small design studio, it was just me. I didn't have any employees because I was just trying to figure it out on my own. I started a second studio because I got a buddy of mine from college and we decided to like partner up. So it was a partnership. So it was the second studio that I ventured into. And it was quite a successful business venture, you know, in the sense that we managed to get good clients, get good projects, and the business was growing, right? But I guess there was some ideologies or philosophies that did not really align over the years. Although business was good, I felt that I needed to, I guess it could be ego speaking as well, that I wanted to do it a certain way. So I decided to let go of that partnership and started again on my own. And so I call it Studio 3. So that's where I am today. And it's been 3.5 years since I started Studio 3. And it's been great so far.
So what would you say are the kind of like somewhat the lessons that you've picked up, right, in a sense of how did you, when you went from your first studio as a solo venture into a partnership, into where you are now, where, from what I understand, you have you have several people working with you underneath, right, for you. So, you know, how did you grow in that sense from there to now?
Well, I'm still learning, you know, like, it's not like, don't get me wrong, like, I have no idea what I'm doing right now as well, right? I'm still figuring it out. But it's just, I think over the years, I slowly got comfortable with myself as a designer. You know, you slowly figure out the industry, you start understanding what the market is like. So I guess life experience naturally just pushed me towards a direction where I felt more confident to build myself, and which resulted in starting Studio 3. You know, I had the confidence now that, you know what, I think I kind of know how to, like, navigate this industry, right? So I decided to.
So that's interesting, right? Because I think in the line that you do, right, there is always that balance that you have to play between being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, and being a designer, right? Yeah. You know, being a creative, right? And I think because of the route you took, you got to focus on being a designer first and then slowly build yourself up to where you are now as an entrepreneur, right? What would you say is the like most distinctive difference or the balance that you have to play between being a designer and a business owner?
Again, I think, because I'm still learning, right? So relatively young in the industry, I've been doing this for 8 years, right? And Studio 3 has been around for 3.5 years. So that's a very good question, because I think a lot of designers who are running their own studios, or maybe I'm speaking for myself more, really underestimated the role of entrepreneurship, and, you know, business development in running a design studio, because you start with this idea that I'm passionate about design. So if I'm passionate about design, I can run a design studio. Obviously, that's not the case at all, right? And I have to wear multiple hats at the studio. So I have a team. I have a team of 7 people, right? And they're all running their own departments. You know, we have a finance department. We have project managers. We have senior designers. I have a head of design. So I have a team, and they're amazing, you know? But at the end of the day, it's still, like I said, it's only 3.5 years. So we're still, they're moving forward with my leadership. So technically, I'm the head of all departments, right? So the balance of being a designer and being an entrepreneur, it's something that I'm constantly trying my best to find the right percentage, the right ratio, right? But the reality is I'm trying to build a sustainable business so that I can let go of all those other hats, so that I can just focus more on playing the role of a design director. You know what I mean?
So what exactly is the market that you're looking to address? You know, are you looking to address a gap in the market, or are you just being complementary part of, you know, where the interior design industry is going in Malaysia, right?
I guess I never saw myself as filling a particular gap in the market, because it is a sort of a saturated market, right? A lot of designers out there, a lot of great designers out there. Blunt about it, I'm very earnest or naive into my approach. Like, I'm just trying to design things. I'm trying to provide good designs that I've learned and acquired over the years from my travels, my experience, and I'm trying to share that design. So I'm just hoping that people follow my work, you know, and Studio 3's work, they can connect with us based on our work, and they want to work with us. So I'm really just trying to put myself out there with the work that we do, and hopefully somebody sort of aligns with what our values are.
But is there a team towards, like, Studio 3? Like, you know, when the customers come to you, right, how do you set yourself apart, or what do you tell them? I mean, imagine I'm a customer, right? And I want to know, like, why Studio 3, right?
I guess because number one, we're very nice people. I myself am trying to realize, like, what is it exactly is our aesthetic, right? I know that we're consistent with what we do, right? And we're trying to always be better and improve on our delivery and our service and our execution. And most importantly, our style. Right, so we're organically trying to develop it into something that people can identify. Right, so as far as what our look is, I let our clients interpret that. Right, but I feel that what we do offer, that's I'm not saying it's different than other people. It's just what we're proud of is we're very process driven. So we take our clients on a journey from A to Z in a very clear and holistic experience. So you know what is it that you're trying to build together with this. So it's not just you submitting your order and then you get the end result. You're part of the process with us. You know, we take you on a journey of that design development. So it's a fun experience, and it's very collaborative. Yeah.
Okay, so talk to me about this design process then. You know, like, how does it happen? What is the process like?
So, I mean, assuming, like, you're a client right now and trying to understand what the steps are like. So it's the first thing we do is try to get some FaceTime between me and the prospect, right, or the client. And in this post-COVID era, that FaceTime could literally be FaceTime or Zoom, right, virtual, right? So we try to establish, like, a human connection. Just try to get to know you so that you can get to know me. Because we're going to, you know, we're about to venture into a working relationship for the next. It could be 3 months, it could be 6 months. Some projects are even a year. So you kind of want to vibe with each other and see if we can work together, right? So that's the first step, just to get to know one another. And then, and also it's data collection. I'm trying to understand what it is that you like, what your interests are, what drives you, what you're passionate about. Because these are things that are going to be introduced in the design, right? And then step two is basically the site analysis. So what we do is, wherever the site may be, that's where me and my team would analyze the space, right? Because the site is basically the canvas that the designers are working on. So once we identify the site, you know, we can identify its strong points, its weak points, the constraints, the limitations. So these are two parts of the process where it's just basically data collection. So once we have these two data, this is when we synthesize the the FaceTime that we have with the client or the users of the space, basically, and then the actual site. And then we, you know, take those information, and then that the next step is the design process itself, which is basically designing the spaces, you know, according to what's needed, like a lounge space, a kitchen, or if it's retail, like a cashier, so and so on and so forth. So all this information that we've collected at the first stage of the design process, we put it into the actual layout. So we build the space from now. So we start extruding the walls and start introducing the elements of design, materials, technicality, whatever considerations that were mentioned in the earlier discussions. So now what you're slowly starting to see the space being developed and being built based on the conversations that we have on a regular basis. And then the next step would be a bit more on the technical part and on the feasible part, where we talk about the design in relation to the cost and the budget, right? And then we start tabulating that information. So what you have is what we call a cost breakdown, or a BQ, a bill of quantities, right? And then you have that breakdown to justify the design treatment. And then the clients would review those costing, and then we try to approve it. And then we'll be, once the designs and the budget has been approved, we enter the construction stage, which then goes to completion.
Yeah, and people are subjective, right? They might come to you with an idea of what they want. But I guess that's why you have your conversations and you stay in touch, right? Because that's when people start to visualize the end products. And if they don't like it, they will make the necessary changes.
A lot of
and
good communication is key.
Yeah.
You know, into getting what the client wants to be realized, right? Of course, if you go into construction, there's a lot of like complex situations where you're trying to realize things that you've never done before, like a glass ceiling or a glass bridge or very weird furniture. So there are...
Does that happen a lot in Malaysia? Do they always want these more...
Ambitious
stuff?
I mean, slowly I'm starting to see, because, you know, clients, they're very well informed, right? Especially with, you know, Pinterest.
Instagram.
Right? Mm. So it can be quite a challenge when they want something that they saw online that doesn't necessarily translate well in Malaysia, you know, so...
Why wouldn't it translate well in Malaysia?
Because culture is different and the limitations on the materials that they've seen it. Because like wood flooring, right? This is a very simple material. If you look at pictures, right, from houses in America or in Europe, they use timber flooring even in bathrooms. Especially like Scandinavian countries, right? Like in Copenhagen, like their bathroom is timber floor, like solid timber, right? Not timber tile, timber floor, right? And Malaysian one, like they want that, and we're like, yo, we can't do that.
Why can't we have?
Because of the humidity in our environment, right?
Okay.
So you end up, so they still want it, so you end up using like timber tiles or like vinyl, right? Yeah. Or SPC. So these are materials that look like timber, but they're not. So you don't really get what you want. Okay. So it sets up for disappointment.
Okay.
You know, so that's why it's our job as the consultants to sort of educate the clients as well on their expectations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. And we'll delve more a bit about the client mindset in a bit, but we're going to take a short break for some messages. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. You're tuned in to Open for Business on Enterprise, and I'm Sim Wee Boon. Today in the studio with me is Kashfi Amir, the founder of the interior design studio, Studio 3. He founded this studio in 2019, and so far we've been talking about the journey that he has experienced so far, starting Studio 3, how's it been, the process of an interior design process. Now I kind of want to go back into kind of what we were talking prior to the break, which is client. You mentioned prior to this interview that there's a lot of designers out there now, you know, in Malaysia, right? A lot of good ones, right?
Really good ones.
Yeah, but I'm curious is whether they are the customers there or not. Whether we have... So when people come out and they want an interior designer or they want to make their homes, their office, their cafes, whatnot, much nicer, much prettier, and they engage in interior design studio, right? I mean, do they know what they want? Have you seen an increase in customers in the industry?
I mean, the interest... In engaging with interior designers definitely is growing because there's a newfound appreciation for their homes, right? But at the same time, also, I think the clients are very intelligent now. They're very well traveled. They read up on this. I mean, look, the amount of interior design shows on TV, right? Everyone's talking about Studio McGee. Everyone's well informed, you know. So they know what they want. They just don't know how to execute it, because that's where we come in, right? Because you don't know the height of a kitchen counter. You don't know the height of what's the right ergonomical dimensions needed for a bathroom, right? So those are the things where they are lacking. So that's why they seek out interior designers. I think in this post-COVID era, people are appreciating their homes even more. And I think there's always new money. I'm seeing a boom in the market or the demand of interior designers.
But of course, this being Malaysia, right? We have that mindset where it's just furniture, but I can do it myself, right? How do you talk to maybe the, not to say those that are looking for interior design, but the unconvinced, right? Because at the end of the day, I guess the very basic or very kind of stereotypical view at interior design for your home, right, is, you know, I can pick up the furnishes myself. I can do it myself, right? Yeah. But it's not, it differs from a specialized service that you offer, right? So how do you talk to, you know, people like that? Like, you know, why is it important to get an interior designer?
Right. I mean, this is my personal philosophy is I don't try to convince people to hire us. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not convincing you to like, no, go, you got to use this. To me, like, my ideal clients are usually clients who seek us out and they want to work with us because they know what we are capable of. They know what we can introduce to the space that they are developing. So when I do get those kind of prospects where they're like, yeah, but I can just do this myself, and you can, you know, where they try to like undermine our role, then
bargain.
No, bargain is fine, just undermining our role in the whole process. So I mean, of course, respectfully, I'll just say, I mean, I try to navigate the conversation where maybe you can find someone else.
Okay, so no, you've worked on houses, you've worked on cafes and retail outlets. Are the approaches towards these different buildings or these kind of different kind of projects different, each and every one of them? How difficult can it get? You know, what considerations must you make when you take on a project like these different projects?
They are different in various aspects, right? In terms of timeline. Like residential projects, they drag the longest. You know, if you're building a bungalow, it can take up to 2 years. If you're doing a cafe, 2 months. You know, so timeline-wise, commercial projects and residential, they differ very.
Why the difference though? Because I would imagine that actually maybe the home is
faster
instead of like the office or the
depends
cafe
on the like condition that you give us the site. Because like if you just bought a fresh apartment, then yeah, all we have to do is design it and then build it. But if you're building it from ground up, like you just bought land, so you've engaged an architect, an engineer, landscape architect, and an interior architect or interior designer, then we come in at a very early stage trying to like advise the architects on sizes of the room, sizes of the doors and things like that. So at that stage, there's like nothing has been constructed on site. So the engagement exists way early of the stage of the construction. So that's a 2-year engagement. So depending on the condition, but generally houses tend to drag longer because like commercial projects, like a cafe, they got to pay rent and they got to start operations. There's a lot of overhead that's like building up. So they want to get it done fast because they want to start business because that's how they make revenue, right? So there is a pressure from the client to get operations to start immediately. So there's that speed needed.
I think now one of the challenges that a lot of businesses face is rising cost of goods, supply chain issues, and even labor, right? So I want to get into a bit of how the business is run and how the business has been, right?
I mean, we're definitely facing some difficulties with like shortage of labor and shortage of like supplies. Like, for example, I have a project now where I couldn't get aircons, just very simple things, right? So I couldn't get aircons for my project. You know, I needed like 11 units. And once we explored our options, we realized it was a global shortage. It wasn't just KL or Malaysia. It was the whole world. There was an issue with the chip that was supposed to be introduced in manufacturing of aircon. So we are dealing with these kind of challenges at the moment. I mean, it's developing, right? These issues are developing. So it's not like we have a handbook to deal with it, but I guess we're just taking it one challenge at a time and trying to communicate to our clients or to the project and see how we can sort of mitigate the cost. And I mean, in the long run, it's also building on relationships that are pre-existing with our suppliers. So some of them, they don't want to raise the cost, especially to designers that they've worked for a long time. You know, so they are transparent about the cost incurment, right? But you know, we're trying to like see if we can meet in the middle, because everybody wants to make money, right? But we also don't want to like bring our costs so high that people can't proceed with the project. So there's a lot of communication going on with suppliers just to see what kind of good prices that we can try to meet with in the middle, you know.
Is there a distinction in a sense where like, okay, all I want to do is for you to just get me the furniture? I mean, how does the services differ, right? Is there a scale when they come to you, right? Of course, there's the ground up. But do you guys also just do like remodeling in a sense where like, oh, I'm going to just get you the furniture, you know?
Just one room.
Yeah, just one room, you know, I mean.
When I started, you know, I was navigating the industry myself, right? So I didn't really know how to approach it. I just thought like, oh, any project is a good project. So yeah, when I started, I had clients who wanted me to do their entire house. And I also had clients who just wanted me to do like two spaces, right? So I realized that it doesn't matter the scale. The complexity and investment in the design is just the same. So when I realized that, I identified that we invest the same amount of time developing the space regardless how big or small. So what we introduce, and I think this is quite common practice, like there's a flaw in the design fees. So that means if you just want to do one room, I'm still going to charge you like at least one floor, you know. So what this does is then the client would sort of reconsider whether or not it's worth it to engage with an interior consultant just for one space, because it's too small. But you know, we can't really, it's not feasible from a business standpoint.
And okay, so you started your business in 2019, right? A year after that COVID hit.
Yeah.
And how has that been for you? Was it difficult to do what you do during COVID-19?
For Studio 3, I mean, we were really, really blessed and lucky that right before the lockdown happened, we just closed on a few design projects. So we got paid the consultation fees, we got paid the construction deposits. So, and then the lockdown happened. But we were very liquid at that time. So we had a healthy cash flow, right? But of course, we didn't know how long the lockdown was going to happen, right? So during the lockdown, I was concerned for the future, you know? So I was preparing for, I mean, I wouldn't call it downsizing, but I was preparing to like, I don't know, cut salary or stuff. But
manage costs.
Yeah, yeah. But there was the last thing I wanted to do, because I love my team. You know, I'm nothing without my team, and Studio 3 is nothing without the team. So, of course, I cut my pay. That's the first thing that I did. We were lucky that nobody got any pay cuts, you know, during the first lockdown. So everybody was in a good mood. Everybody, I mean, the spirits were high, right? So it's quite unfortunate for a lot of companies that couldn't do that. And it's not a personal thing. It's something they had to do that to like sustain the business, right? Mm-hmm. But we were fortunate enough that we didn't experience any pay cuts. Except for me. but then lockdown was lifted. So, you know, everybody was going back to the site, the projects, even though it was a little bit limited. But by then, I was already sort of preparing for a potential second lockdown. So mentally, because during the lockdown, I was like, oh, this is scary, right? So how do we avoid this? So I'm still an entrepreneur who's learning. So a lot of these terminologies on business, I'm not familiar with, right? So at that point, I realized, you know what? I got to have some sort of fund allocation, right? So just to make sure that if a lockdown happens again and the industry is a little bit dried, I have some sort of an allocation of funds that has been sorted. And I did that. So when the second lockdown did happen, again, we were okay.
But was it easy to deal with? Because, you know, like you said, right, you prefer face-to-face communication, right? And, you know, your work deals with sight a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So how did you navigate kind of like the sudden appearance of a pandemic, of health concerns?
It's funny how COVID feels like it was like 10 years ago, but it's happening as we speak, right? So I remember like the first lockdown, it was quite apocalyptic. Like we had to get all kinds of special passes, and then there were so many roadblocks. So I remember the first lockdown, and when they were slowly lifting the restrictions, right? And you could travel like a certain miles. Like it was really chaotic actually. So to be honest, I think the first 6 months, site was like, it was not productive. It was not productive. It was very, everything was just going at a pace that was barely anything. So we didn't lose money doing it, but the delay was crazy. But I guess we're lucky because the clients were delayed as well.
Mm,
you know what
okay.
I mean? Yeah. So
So they were understanding of the delays that have to happen. Yeah. Okay.
And at that time, I think the fear of COVID was at an all-time high. So people didn't even want people around.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But did any projects canceled on you? Were they kind of like, did you have to have discussions with them? Like, look, it's either we do this later or we can't proceed.
We had projects that canceled because their shareholders were freaking out at the global state of the world. I mean, the global state of the economy. So they backed out on doing a project. So lucky enough that no deposits were made on my side. So when they stopped it, it was like, okay, and then at least we just refund back the first deposit and cancel that project.
So how do you approach marketing for Studio 3?
For me personally, I really want it to be authentic in terms of how Studio 3 presents itself, right? So if, I mean, anyone listening right now who follows Studio 3, what we share is really what we do. We post pictures of our work, our process, and our team. Because that's essentially what we do. It's just the vibes or the culture at Studio 3. So I try to share that. And there's a healthy balance of what you see happens at the studio and what our actual world looks like. But I personally, for me, when I go to like on Instagram and I see a design studio account and it's just pictures of their work, it's just their work, that's it, then it's nice. And some of their works are amazing. But I feel like I have no idea what's going on. I don't know what the people are like, you know, because sometimes that's what matters to me. Who are the people like involved in this operation? Because I kind of want to have an idea on what the people are like and what the culture is like. For me, that was important that we showcased what our culture is like as much as what our work looks like. So it's not like a menu of like design options, you know?
So you got to showcase who you are. All the best to that. And that's all the time we have for Open for Business. I've been speaking to Kashfi Emir, the founder of Studio 3, a interior design studio based here in KL. If you want to look up for what Studio 3 is all about, you can look up for them on Instagram. Their handle is We Are Studio 3. That's WeAreStudioThree. If you've missed any part of this conversation, you can find a podcast on our all-new BFM app available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Thank you very much for listening. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.